Every day, companies you've probably never even heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records and the internet, and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you are backed by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support to help you recover quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all: data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what is not, and puts you back in control. So right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That is enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
All right, welcome back to Friends from Work. We're here today to live react to the second Avengers Doomsday teaser that we just watched minutes ago. It's the one that features Thor. Ravi, you know we're both Thor guys, so I'm excited to hear your thoughts on this. Why don't you go first? Overall takeaways from this new teaser.
I've got a couple written down. I think.
Oh, I love it. We're back. We're so back. If Robbie's taking notes.
So I'll start here. My first thought was I love that they are picking up where Love and Thunder left off, like in a meaningful way. You know, like sometimes we get follow-ups that may or may not directly connect to whatever came immediately prior. And sometimes it's like if people feel like it's too tonally different, or if people feel like it was controversial or whatever. And Marvel's generally done a good job of making things matter eventually, even if it takes a while. But, you know, like the way that we pick up with Thor here, the whole thing is really centered on his role as a father. And that is very much kind of what Love and Thunder was about. And so I like the fact that they are, like, because we've talked so much about Thor's development as a character, it makes me happy to see them taking this so seriously and letting that move him forward, because you kind of have to, like, this is a new dynamic for him. Like, this is the thing, like, you know, it's not about like loss anymore. And it's not about like anger or vengeance or justification. Like I really like seeing them bring that to the forefront. So that was kind of my first overwhelming takeaway.
Let's start with the kids on that front, because I think, one, you're right. It would have been really easy for them to not run away from the ending of Love and Thunder, but look past that a little bit. Like, for example, if this teaser had nothing to do with love, I don't think anybody would have been asking questions. They would have been
right.
Like, okay,
right.
Yeah, that was just a thing. And now it's an adopted daughter, so it's a different thing. And maybe
I have expected it to be just like a throwaway line in the movie. Like, oh, yeah, she's right. Back with so-and-so, you know.
Right. But doubling down on that, I think, is such a perfect thing for his character arc, like you said, because Thor, of all people, we have talked about for literally 7 years on this podcast, tracing his character arc throughout the stories. And I'm not going to do it again, but post Endgame, you have the depressed Thor who needs some healing, and then he goes through a lot in Love and Thunder. And whether you like that movie or not, we feel like it does an incredible job of exploring that post Endgame, what is left for me? What am I here for? Purpose. And I just feel like a combination of him kind of going back to a little bit more Shakespearean Thor, the shorter hair, a little bit more of kind of an OG look, but now he has a new purpose. The daughter is a different thing that we never really predicted. We didn't talk about pre-Love and Thunder. So to have a, like, as both fathers, you and I, of little girls, like this is a different dynamic that we haven't explored with Thor, and I think would be awesome, because family's always been important to the Thor storyline with Odin and Hela and Loki and how that all plays out. And so I feel like, what a great natural progression. I want to see Thor as a king and as a dad.
Well, and you know what's kind of interesting about that is as you're talking about the dad element of it, you do now, like, we now know that Steve Rogers is a dad. And
that was my third point.
Depending on how you look at it, like, you know,
what's going on with the kids? What's going on with the kids? This is not intentional anymore, right? This is not because, like, you don't intentionally introduce a baby for Steve Rogers, right? Unless you're trying to do something with Franklin, Steve Rogers' baby, Love.
Yeah.
Even Hulk has a child now. Which follow up on that at all.
And Morgan Stark. Like, if you want to look at kind of like the OG Avengers, you know, Hawkeye obviously has a family, although I don't think Jeremy Renner is supposed to be in Doomsday.
A tiny Chadwick, you know, like a tiny T'Challa.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it is kind of crazy. Like, it seems...
not random. So what are they setting up? Is it just like a thematic passing of the torch? Is that all it is? Or is there something about the kids, a la Stranger Things or something, that Doom needs, you know, or something?
Yeah, is it some kind of, like, is it them being parents that somehow makes them more motivated to, like, help Reed and Sue? Or even assuming that that's, like, in my mind, I've been operating as though the inciting incident here is going to be something to do with Doom taking Franklin, but I really have no basis for that. But you're right. Yeah, it is, like, we've seen two trailers. There's a third one that has been leaked, and I don't know what the fourth one will be, although you and I have speculated that it could be a Doom reveal, finally. I don't know.
It's interesting with Doom, quote, taking Franklin. I just rewatched it this morning because I was catching my dad up. You know, he doesn't take Franklin.
But
he was truly just trying to kidnap him, don't you think he would just swoop in, grab him, disappear? And the post-credit sequence would be Sue coming back around the corner to nothing there, right?
Don't
you think that would be the intention? But it's almost like by letting him play with the mask and see his face that he's trying to endear himself to her, or, like we've talked about before, like that Sue actually knows him. Like, it wouldn't be the most jarring thing ever, not good, clearly. So, like, is it more of like a not a relationship, but you know what I mean? Is it more of a thing than it is just kidnapping all the kids?
I do think that that would be, one, more in line with the comic relationship, even going way back. Like, even if you go back before Doom was kind of, like, more, like, enmeshed within the Fantastic Four, like, their personal lives, he still was such a mainstay. That I think, like, they make such an intentional choice in Fantastic Four, because I just watched it too, to show the empty seat, like, for Latveria, and that, like, opening montage when they're showing her, I think, at the UN. And, like, I don't think that they do that if they're not showing you that there is some existing Dr. Doom figure that would be holding that seat. But I think that, like, yeah, I think that if he's not, like, an adversarial figure at that point to the Fantastic Four, I still think he's a known entity. I don't think that they're being introduced to Dr. Doom for the first time in Doomsday. I mean, I could be wrong. We have like so little to go on, but yeah, I wonder what the parent thing means. I also had a similar thought to what you were kind of starting to get at with the OG Thor feel. And I just wanted to say that I like you can tell when at least McFeely is writing Thor, like,
he wrote these lines. Yeah, he must have written these lines.
I think so. I mean, like, in going back through, like, I've recently...
Call a spade a spade. It's obviously elevated, right? Like, that's obviously just better writing, right?
It's all... I mean, because even
the way he's speaking that is a perfect blend of Shakespeare, but, like, not so out there that it's like, does mother know if you wear her drapes? Not that, but it's like... No.
It's the best.
Like, the warmth that I'm not a battle, like, oh my gosh.
No, it's like... I mean, okay, even if you say Ragnarok is the best Thor, it's certainly the best Thor movie, but if you say that that is like the best movie we've had with Thor in it, which some could easily say, I don't really think it's because of how Thor is written. Like, I think a lot of what works well in that movie is the story. I think Chris Hemsworth he acts like his acting is really great. He's really funny. There's a lot of great improv. The epic charisma. Moments are great, but it's not because of his dialogue, if that makes sense. Like,
I totally agree.
There is something about, like, because again, it's one of those things that I still think generally, for as silly as the story is in like Dark World, I still feel like the writing of Thor there. See, there it is. Even in a Marvelette. It's the most it's been like, okay, yeah, this is like, it's funny enough, but it's also like, he takes himself seriously. There's something about the way that they understand Thor that I think has made the character click. I think it's what made Infinity War Thor so memorable.
It feels like they have potential to have the most perfect quintessential version of him that we've gotten yet. Just because, yes, I agree, they know how to handle him, but I'm totally with you. Ragnarok was almost like the shakeup it needed, but it's not necessarily, you're not quoting every line he has as like, wow, that really is the character personified.
Right. Right.
Infinity War, I think, is the closest thing. But even in that, he has a couple, you know, like rabbit jokes and things that still have a little bit of that Ragnarok feel. And then obviously Endgame is totally different because it's a whole different can of worms.
Although heart-wrenching, when they let him, like the conversation with his mom, like when they let him be, like when he gets to that point, you know.
For sure. But this has potential to have like all of it. The strength of Ragnarok Thor, or like Love and Thunder Thor, but combine that with the look of Infinity War, but some of the writing of like Dark World.
Yeah.
Which is basically what I want for Thor.
Well,
I mean, you can mix in a few jokes and stuff that he's like sharp and clever.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if it kind of stays in this tone, huge win for me.
I think it's, and maybe this is going to be a conversation or is already a conversation as this has come out. We talked last time briefly about how there will be some debate about what it means that Marvel's bringing Steve Rogers back. And for what it's worth, since that trailer has come out, I have had, I don't know if you've had this, I've had more people reach out to me to ask me just what I think about it than I've had people ask me about anything Marvel in a while. You know, like I didn't have people
because
ask me what I thought
Marvel
about.
Let's refrain from getting into any of the reaction but oh my gosh, that's a whole separate episode.
Yeah.
Totally agree. No matter how you like the release or the leaks or whatever, people are talking about it.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah.
People are talking about it. So,
and I do like, again, to me, I don't really care about the meta narrative or what the motivations are or anything. To me, as someone that has really enjoyed the vast majority of post-Endgame Marvel stuff, but also you know, we both have an Infinity War and Endgame at the top of our lists of our rankings still. To me, I can't help but notice, like, they're bringing back Steve Rogers, but they're also bringing back Thor in, like, the version of Thor that is most recognizable from Infinity War, like, with the short hair.
But it doesn't undermine
because of what they've done with Love and Thunder. So it's a way where, like, I don't think it's like a cheap, like, weird, but you know, it's, he doesn't have Mjolnir in the trailer. He's got Stormbreaker. And so it's like, it is kind of they're at least sending a message that they are trying to pick up more or less where those movies left off. And so I think that you do have a situation where you could be kind of like what we talked about last time. Like, if you're someone that has followed all of this, I'm getting the sense that because of the call that they're making with love here, I think that you're going to be rewarded for having followed all this stuff. I think if you're someone that, because of the pandemic, because of whatever, like, you kind of dropped off after Endgame and you come back and you pick up here, I think they're trying to make that okay also. And I think that that's probably the right move.
That perfectly transitions into my, I guess, second or third point, wherever we're at. I think you can never fault the Russos, and specifically Marcus and McFeely, for not, let me put it this way. I think maybe their greatest strength is how they handle and balance these characters. Like, you'll never walk out of a Russo brother movie and think to yourself, they didn't have respect for what had happened. Like, they're going to do their research. They've probably watched everything post Endgame, I would imagine, like, very intensely.
Yeah.
So, like, they know Love and Thunder. As I'm on my rewatch journey right now, I just recently finished Civil War. I've already watched Winter Soldier. There's a lot of things you can take away from McFeely and the Russo brothers. Like, you would say, they handle all those characters so well. They have a respect for the source material. Unbelievable. They have such a good ability at balancing all these things. Like, so many things going on, and yet they're perfectly paced. They really know how to get to the heart of a matter with dialogue and make you feel stakes. So there's a lot of things you would say. My transition is, I don't think when you go back and watch that you would say the cinematography is a slam dunk. That is not my takeaway from a Russo brother movie. Yes, the action of the shaky cam is kind of fun, but just for a second, like, get out of, like, the get more into, like, a filmmaker perspective.
Yeah. No, actually, it's so funny you're saying this. I thought about this.
Think about watching Thunderbolts. There's just, like, a coloring to it.
Yeah.
And there are establishing shots, and the way the camera kind of moves, and a smoothness. Even, honestly, like, I'm thinking about, like, Eternals even. There's a little bit of a different take on how the camera plays with the story than what the Russos did that I just prefer. Honestly, even Endgame, you don't leave Endgame. Like, of all the things that Endgame is so good at, the top tier visuals is not the lasting impact for me. Yes, there's the shot of, like, Captain America facing the army. That one stands out. But throughout a 3-hour movie, it's not just like a cinematography clinic, if you will.
Yeah.
So I say this to say, through two teasers, it to me feels like we're stepping up. Like, cinematography wise, this feels like now more in vein with Thunderbolts. I challenge you, Robbie, to even look at a still shot of either the Chris Evans one or the Thor one, and just look at that compared to, like, Civil War, and even the color. It's almost got a yellowish hue. It's so warm versus the grayness. You know, people always crush them for being too gray. Do you know this? Like, this is like a negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, Civil War is very not colorful compared to, like, a Guardians movie.
Well,
this has, like, the warmth of Thunderbolts, and even, like, the establishing shot in the woods, the way Steve Rogers gets off his motorcycle feels like a different kind of film than what the Russos have done. And I think that's a huge win.
Well, and have you looked at who's doing cinematography for Doomsday?
I have, but you're putting me on the spot and I'm blanking right now. So you have to remind me.
It is Newton Thomas Sigel, and folks, you know, listening to our podcast will know him primarily as the cinematographer for all the Bryan Singer X-Men films.
Oh, interesting.
Which,
and I can't say I remember them being unbelievable, you know, cinematography,
although I think what you're saying, well, and what you're saying kind of makes sense though, because think about like Days of Future Past, which I would say does have kind of a warmer, like I'm thinking about the scene where like Logan wakes up in the 70s.
For sure.
Like has a very distinct feel to it. And that, you know, that is a movie I think the framing is nice and but also like he did cinematography for Drive, the Ryan Gosling film, which looks so cool. So I do think that like it's notable that it's not, I think they use the same cinematographer for the Cap movies and basically all the Russo Marvel movies. I think they use the same cinematographer. So I think you're right.
And I'm not bashing that guy. I'm not bashing that guy, but it is, I think it's worth noting that it seems like they kind of went through everything that goes into making a movie and they said, what worked about Infinity War and Endgame? Like, oh, Silvestri, he worked. Oh, the Russos, he worked.
Yeah.
But it does feel like they were like, you know what? The cinematography can improve.
Yeah.
Which is a good call, I think.
There are shots in Civil War that I have just always thought, like, not the visual, like, not the CGI artistry per se, but just, like, the framing. Like, certain shots, like, when, like, Tony and Cap are talking on the airstrip, where it's just like the framing feels like slightly stilted compared to, you're right, like what you would get in Thunderbolts. Yeah. Which is one thing we were really excited about going into Thunderbolts based on who we knew the cinematographer to be.
I do wonder how much of it is just straight the color too, because like I'm thinking about the desert sequence with Thunderbolts, but honestly, even the night stuff, like the first time that Sentry levitates, it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Like out front of that, whatever that base is, that bunker. So anyways, that's my other takeaway. When we watch the third one, if it kind of falls in the same line, then I'm starting to get real excited about what it could look like. Honestly, it looks even closer to the Odyssey trailer, like the way they're walking through the woods, than it does like Civil War.
I have one other kind of like behind the scenes piece, creative team oriented, and then one sort of speculation thing, and then I'm done.
Okay, hit me
for now. So I was just curious looking into it, you know, because we talk about Marcus McFeely. They are famously a writing duo. Like they've been writing stuff together since the Narnia movies, and I was just curious finally going into this because, you know, we didn't get any dialogue in the Cap trailer. We did get dialogue here, and that was very front and center. And like we said, it feels very like classic Thor in that way. And I was just curious what it's going to mean to not have Marcus here and to just have Stephen McFeely. Because, you know, obviously you know, they're a writing team, and so to not have half the team there, it will feel different. But I will say, like, I went back and read some interviews that they put out around Endgame talking about their writing process, because I just was hoping to get a sense of kind of who did what and what their, you know, sort of like what we've talked about when we've talked to, like, the Newton brothers on the composing side, like, what different folks bring to the table. And it did encourage me in that they both clearly, like, I think they both wrote scenes, they both kind of like cross edited and stuff like that. But I mean, it does sound like Stephen McFeely was, like, he describes himself as the OCD outline guy. Like, he says, like, I think Marcus is more of the comic book fan. I think McFeely kind of became more of that through the process of writing these movies. I think Marcus, it seems like, does a lot more of the, again, I think they both write scenes, so I'm not saying one writes and one doesn't, but it sounds like Marcus does more of the kind of back end editing, revision stuff. To me, the fact that McFeely is the person that has the kind of OCD tendencies, particularly when it comes to the outlining piece, makes it gives me some comfort going into a movie like this, because I think that you and I have both said, like, the dialogue is huge in both Infinity War and Endgame, and there are so many memorable lines in both of those movies. But I think that, like, the thing that would have made those movies really, like, succeed or fail was going to be the structuring, because you're dealing with so much, like, so many characters, but also so many little subplots and interweaving things, especially in Endgame. Like, Infinity War, it's all the characters, but in Endgame, it's like figuring out how to make all of this stuff make sense and then, like, resolve in a satisfying way. So when you're upping the ante with all that stuff, like we are with Doomsday, to me, I think it's reassuring that McFeely is the one that's coming in prepared to like you're saying, probably watch through all this stuff and get it all structured out and make sure that it's all making sense in the way that it needs to. And, you know, also, it's not like Marcus is like, they didn't divorce. Like, Marcus is just working with the Agbo stuff. And so right. I'm sure he can still be, like, consulted and you as needed, wonder if, but
exactly. You wonder if he'll get a little credit at the end. Just, like, special thanks because they popped in, you know,
yeah,
into the office and said, like, hey, what would you do for this? Well, you know, probably like that, I would imagine. But
you would have to think, if only to have someone on the outside that knows what the, like, what the standard should be to be like, hey, is this bad?
For sure. No, I totally agree. I think that's probably the most important thing that they have been missing. So having that is good. It's a little bit hard, like you said, to know truly who's doing what. You know, that goes right anytime you're making anything with somebody. But if what you're reading is true, yeah, I think that's great news.
Because, you know, it's also like you hear stuff like James Gunn worked with the Guardians scene specifically in Infinity War. So it's
right,
like,
right,
I'm sure. And then, like, there are, like, Chris Pratt, like, improv some lines in those scenes. And, you know, like, you've got so, like, RDJ is famously improvisational. Chris Hemsworth has become more improvisational. So,
and you're kind of leaning on those people too, so they have input. Yeah. So it's like, you can write it as much as you want, but then also you're probably asking Chris Hemsworth, does this feel right for Thor as well? So there's probably a lot of people that are triple checking this stuff.
And that's where I feel like the dialogue, I think, like, I trust McFeely enough to, like, give them the right dialogue to work with. But I think that because you have actors of the caliber that are in this movie, including people like Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, who are legitimate legends, I'm more concerned about the mechanics of the storytelling than I am about the, like, scene by scene. My, like, final kind of speculation question.
Yeah, love it. Please.
Who do you think is recruiting Thor here? Like, how do you think he has become aware of this fight and this one last enemy?
Yeah, you're asking the wrong person, because I don't even fully get, who that is. Like, I know Dr. Doom from the comics, right, like, kind of the incursion thing and all this, but, like, when he says one final enemy, is it like Dr. Doom has a bunch of people hostage and he has to go take this guy down? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? I don't even,
yeah.
I thought the whole point of the movie kind of was that it's not even going to be as black and white. We've talked about how in Infinity War and Endgame, it was very clear, like, Thanos is trying to do something that we don't want to have happen, so we stop him.
Right.
And I think this movie is not going to be as much that. So what battle is he necessarily even going to, I guess?
Yeah,
and who knows, where is he? Is he on Earth? And who knows how to get a hold of him?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, like, I mean, depending on the sequencing of this, if they bring... You know what, though? You know what? Like, I forgot. You and I were texting about this, like, a week or two ago. Maybe all of this recruiting is Loki. Think about this.
The very last shot in Love and Thunder is they're, like, going on to other planets and helping other people, right? They're just kind of traveling around. That's like the last we saw him, right?
Right, right. Although it does look like
we don't know if that's Earth.
Yeah, it doesn't. You're right. I mean, we didn't see all the rooms and, like, the little, like, pod that they're living in Love and Thunder. They make it look like he's in like it looks Earth-like, like the woods he's in, the like house, you know, where she's in a bed. It looks very like warm and kind of Earth-like. But you're right, that doesn't mean anything.
I think the first scene of the movie is going to be Dr. Doom busting into the TVA. That's what I think the first scene is going to be.
Yeah. Which would also be a really nice kind of full circle thing for Loki in terms of the first scene of Infinity War. Like if they want to kind of go full circle there. But I do think,
and I think somehow his magic is going to work in the TVA. And everyone's going to be like, that's not possible.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going to happen.
Well, yeah.
Which would be pretty epic. Yeah.
I mean, because at first I was thinking, you know, maybe Cap is the one to come and recruit Thor. Maybe, like, I don't know, Quill, because, like, they would know how to get in touch with each other, probably.
You're right that also Loki would be able to move the needle, though. Like, if he sees Loki, has a reunion, and he's like, I've changed, dude. I've been doing this. You have no idea. Because
that would be the thing.
And then he'd be like, okay, I got to do this for Loki. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Quill. Quill would maybe know how to get a hold of him, like you said. But would he do that for Quill? I'm not sure he's, like, leaving his daughter for Quill.
Right. I think, like, and I don't know that Quill would feel like the I don't know that he would feel the need to reach out in that way, right? Because that's not really their...
Right, and like, I don't think he's leaving for any of the new Avengers. Like, he's not moving. Right. I don't think he's leaving for
Sam. I don't even think Sam would know how, would know how to get in touch with him, or Bucky, or like any of
them. And let me think about that for a second. How much time has Sam or Bucky ever spent with Thor? Let me think for a second. Hardly any. All Bucky Hardly would any. Know, right, is that in Infinity War, like, oh my gosh, this guy showed up and just mowed everyone down.
Yeah.
That's all he would know, really.
Same with Sam.
Because then he gets dusted. So I guess the next time they come out of the portals being undusted and they see Thor fighting.
Yeah.
And then the funeral.
But I'm just wondering.
So it's Loki or it's I think Steve, maybe Steve.
But I think, and maybe it's Loki and Steve if Loki gets Steve first. But like, I think the more I've thought about it, because that was my initial question was how does Steve come back into the picture? And we talked about that a lot, but also like, what does that mean? And who would have access and how would he get back? And I think it does make sense that like the person that could kind of break all the rules as they've been established would be Loki, both because of like his role within the TVA, but also because of his new role as like the god of stories. And we don't even really know means.
It's Loki, because here's why, too. If the first scene is Dr. Doom busting the TVA, I don't think they're going to replay the hits, aka have that scene end with Dr. Doom killing Loki.
No.
A la Infinity War.
Especially not after leveling him up like they did.
But to set up his power, it would be crazy if he shows up to TVA, his magic does work, he starts mowing down people. Maybe even that's where you get a tiny cameo of Kang. Like, He Who Remains is eliminated or something, you know, via this right away at the beginning. But then wherever Loki is with the timelines is maybe not accessible or something. So Loki sees this all, but doesn't necessarily have like a face-to-face interaction, or somehow escapes. And then that's where he goes and goes, look, you're not going to believe this. This is what I've been doing. This is what's happening. And there's this guy. You know what I mean? Blah,
blah. And do you have like, I mean, it's so fun. This is what's fun about movies like this, because I remember feeling this way about Endgame. Like, there are so many versions of this that could happen that you can speculate about things endlessly and like either be super close or super far. And it all seems like
it
totally
might not be
realistic
at all.
But if it is what you're saying, man, wouldn't it be fun to introduce Doom? Like, if they do have a Doom suit design that is more kind of like the infamous Iron Man, like it looks kind of like an Iron Man suit, but like, you know, with the cloak and silver, like, wouldn't it be, from Loki's perspective, like if he is in some kind of like, if there's some kind of standoff that involves Kang or Kang variants, or like they finally kind of come back to the Quantumania post-credit scene with all the Kangs, like you could have a moment where like Iron Man shows up and you think that it's some kind of like hero saving the day taking on the Kangs. But then, yeah, it's actually like a villainous Doom Iron Man, which would also be kind of a dope, different introduction. And it's all like, it all works because Loki has the context.
You're right. Because we haven't seen him, I think they are going to feel the need to establish him immediately. Like some kind of like it can't be a slow burn to a Doom reveal because we've had the slow burn for 7 years, I think.
Yeah.
So I think it's like they're going to need to set up his power. So like going to the Council of Kangs and immediately wiping them all off the map or something, or like the famous comic sequence of him ripping out Thanos' spine.
Oh, right.
Like, what if it started with something like that to just go like, this is serious, you know?
Yeah.
This guy means business.
I mean, it's
exciting. Yeah. I'm laughing right now out of pure joy.
No, I love it. I think it makes so much sense. And like finally to kind of bring it back to this particular trailer. One, this is exactly what I would want from a Thor trailer. Like if I haven't made that clear, like it does make me happy. I was really curious to see what it would look like to get Hemsworth back in an Avengers movie. And it just feels exactly like I want it to. I feel the same way about him. He and Chris Evans specifically, I think, are so good in these roles. Like, the MCU has so many great like actors, and there are so many talented folks, including RDJ. But Evans and Hemsworth, like, I see them in other projects, and there are other things that they've done that I love. But there's something about these characters that they just like they click into, and it just feels really nice to let them do that again. So I love that. But I like kind of talking about Loki. I think one thing that they're going to have to nail in this movie, and I think this gives them an opportunity to do that, is the Loki Thor reunion, because that's such an emotional moment in Infinity War.
It's going to be so good.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good.
And with like the Sylvester music, it's just
the crazy thing about that is the context is Loki has all of this character growth and history that Thor has no idea.
Right.
Like Thor, as far as he knows, is still kind of it's going to be the mischievous brother a little bit. Literally, the last thing was he lied about not taking the stone, and he did.
You really are the worst brother, was the last thing Thor said to him.
Right. So, but Loki is going to almost be in tears, probably, to be like, "Oh my gosh, dude!" Like. But yeah. Even that's weird because that version of Loki didn't go through the rest of the stuff. Right.
He saw it play out. Yeah.
He's seen it and he's seen a lot of stuff and he's gone through of his own journey. They both, it's almost like the audience knows more than both of them do. You
know? I know, but even reunion. Like, even the classic Loki, like the story he tells Loki before he like sacrifices himself about how
glorious purpose Loki. Yeah.
And how like he finally left hiding because he missed his brother. And like the way that it's like, you know, Loki's been, he's got all of this stuff that even though he hasn't lived it,
yeah.
I do think he's going to carry so much weight into that conversation. And then, yeah, now Thor is a totally different person than the one that Loki last interacted with, at least in person.
Right. Well, and Mobius really changed Loki too. You know, like all those conversations of why are you the way you are, you know, this way. I think I see greater things in you than this.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah.
Man.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Well, that's enough for today. But yes, it's going to be really fun. We have a whole year yet. I keep telling people that online who are like mad that this is not a full trailer. I'm like, first of all, it's a year out. There will be a full trailer. I think this has just been kind of a fun way to extend the cast announcements, essentially. You see 5 seconds of something, but it's again, it's establishing all these things. It's establishing that they know what they're doing. It's establishing the cinematography is a notch up. It's establishing that these actors just fall right back into these roles. So
and
I think it's been a win.
I think the other thing that is kind of clutch for me is like there was something like the thing about the chairs. It was fun in how insane, like the insane quantity of it, where it's like, oh my gosh, like not only all these different kind of universes colliding, but just the sheer number of actors. But I think that what's nice about at least these first two is it's focusing it to where it's like, but this is an Avengers movie. Like, we don't mean Avengers in that everyone's an Avenger. It's every Marvel character again. Like, I like that they're still saying, like, hey, here are the these are the Avengers, like, because the, you right. know, like,
that's a good point.
So it makes me, I think you're right. I think it's ultimately, it's a smart call, at least for me. I think it's making me more and more excited. And again, a lot of people are texting me about it. So it's at least like breaking through.
We'll see you next time here on Friends from Work.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.